And this is the Taylor Report. I think we have a little music. We take a minute. No, it turns out we don't have a little music. So I will whistle. Phil will sing something.
I'm not going to sing anything. I want to ask you about the elections in Ukraine and Spain. I can't sing about them, though.
All right. That's funny that you should mention it. Before we say something about that, we'll remind everybody that we're in our most serious membership drive in our history. So please go to CIUT.fm right now and to support the Taylor Report and support CIUT, the great station, and make a generous membership. I think such people are called donors. Be a great donor. Become a member. And Phil, they can go to Dubrovnik, right?
Well, somebody's going to go to Dubrovnik because they gave money to CIUT, and it could be you.
Here's the best shot you're going to get. Yeah. 1 week in Dubrovnik. I'm learning how to say it. Last week it was Dubrovnik, but you taught me, so Dubrovnik. And two people to Dubrovnik. So but we don't believe in carrots here around here. It's more sticks. So we want you to just get busy and say help make this station an ongoing enterprise, despite the wishes of the donut loving premier. It's a CIUT.fm. That's the answer to all your problems. And just go there and where it says donate, jump on it. Now, Phil, about this election. What an amazing thing. Let's start with Spain. The socialist won. And you notice the reporting. The socialist won 126 seats.
Right.
And that's and they are close enough to easily, I think, they're going to be able to form a government. There is a very strong socialist party called Podemos, who used to be one party, but as nature demands, there always has to be splits, or otherwise nobody's happy. So there are two groups, but between them they did secure a lot of votes. But I noticed the Western media is fascinated, obsessed with a right wing or fascist, or somehow it's like Ishmael Reed talking about people who like to use the N-word. It's like a drug. They just can't get it out of their mouths. A crack, I guess he said it was, like if they take it like it's crack. But so they're talking about the right wing. But the right wing got 10 seats. And, you know, that, frankly, across Europe and everywhere, there are a lot of political parties, left and right, who are doing this. But incidentally, the Green Party in Canada is getting close to a 10% factor in our elections. You can see it coming because for a whole number of reasons, but they're similar to those that are being experienced in the votes elsewhere. I thought, what an interesting confluence of events. The last Spanish Civil War veteran, the volunteers who went to fight against the fascists, against Franco, the seizure of power by Franco, the coup, which was supported by Nazi Germany and by Mussolini's Italy, both supported Franco. And many wonderful people, of course, celebrated names. We have Ernest Hemingway and the great French novelist Malraux fought on the side of the Republic. At any rate, the last veteran died in London this past week. Jeremy Corbyn, very much to his credit, celebrated the man and spoke of him in glowing terms and said that he had done the right thing and it was a model for us. So he dies, and we're having this election. There is this party that they're talking about on the right. By the way, their slogan is Reconquista. They want to do for Spain what Ferdinand and Isabella did. You remember Ferdinand and Isabella.
Oh, yes,
they are the ones who drove Jews and Muslims out of Spain.
In the same year.
It was a
complete coup.
Declaration, a kind of Trump-like posture, you might call it.
Yeah.
And tomorrow is April the 30th, if I'm right. Am I right?
It is
April 30th.
It is that.
In the year 711, April 30th, the General Tariq, the Muslim commander, crossed the straits and captured what is now called Gibraltar. And Gibraltar is simply a bad Spanish rendition of Jamal Tariq, Jamal Tariq, which means Tariq's Mountain. And they defeated the Visigoth Catholics and brought a considerable civilization to the area. Built roads, made everything better.
Well, so the Visigoths weren't great on civilization.
They were not high on civilization. As a matter of fact, the reason they lost is they were so miserable is that half their army turned on them. That is also. And they call that a betrayal. But those were people who said, I'm not doing your dirty work. You haven't been nice to us, putting it that way. So it is just an amazing kind of moment. Now, here's a detail that Canadians have to relish. This is a Canadian moment in Spain. The left is within a few votes, and they will find them, I'm sure, forming a majority. But in order to do it, they're going to apparently need 5 votes from Catalonia. And those will have to be people who were elected on an independence ticket. So, it's like watching a hand reaching for a rope, and that rope belongs to people who are calling for independence for Catalonia. So you can see that probably we're in for a lot more mud wrestling than we have now witnessed. It's going to become very, because even if they form the government, it'll set off, there'll be an atomic division of people. There's going to be people who are going to go right over the top to the right. And definitely the left is going to have to get stronger. And of all places, Spain, and of all questions, going all the way back to the issue of Islam, which has got, again, it's like crack cocaine in the mouths of the American-Canadian right. It excites them. They think if they say the word Muslim, they think they've said something, and their eyebrows raise and their voices, go off the charts. So that's where we are with that. It's quite an amazing, in my view, situation. I don't know. Did you have any other? Are you yourself following it?
I am. I would note that these fascists, their support all came from the mainstream right-wing party, and they were always inside that party. So now they split. They started their own. But their percentage of the population hasn't grown, right? And there is this thing being made by the press here, like this is some watershed event. Well, to me, the watershed event is that the socialists and other left-wing parties did very well. That's the watershed event here.
Yeah, you're right. And the Sanchez, the leader of the Socialist Party, the Socialist Party has the most seats, and then there's Podemos, also socialist, and they have, I think, 12 or 14 seats. His slogan was, after winning the election, he said, the future has won and the past has lost. And that's really...
That's a
nice summary. Yeah. And now we have all these additional things coming in now. There's a whole question of the future of Europe. There's also the attitude of Spain towards that area of the world where they once held a lot of sway, South America. You have... The Podemos leaders expressed strength and solidarity for Maduro in Venezuela. We'll be talking about Venezuela in a few minutes with Eve Engler, but they don't do it, I have to say, they don't do it with the kind of fervor one would hope, because there's all this fear of NATO, basically. NATO can harm you in more ways than just military. They seem to have ability to pick up the phone and cause you political problems. These parties are being cautious, although they're not joining in, and certainly Podemos is not, in any attacks on Venezuela. Mexico is now entering a new phase. It has a new president, and Mexico is staying in a very principled way, staying clear of the Venezuela matter. They say Venezuela's business is an internal matter. They believe in the sovereignty of Venezuela, and they believe in the international law and the United Nations charter. Therefore, they are not buying into Trump's intimidating policy of getting everybody to line up for a coup. As you know, Ms. Freeland and Trudeau speak of a pretender named Guaido that they created. This is simply a guy, hip pocket fascist that they created. And they say he's the president of Venezuela because they say so. That is, you couldn't meddle more thoroughly in the internal affairs of a country. And then they even act like pirates. There is money, there's gold belonging to Venezuela, which is being stolen. The British took the Venezuelan gold. It belongs to the Venezuelan government, and they are giving it to Guaido. I should say they're keeping it in their bank on his behalf. And whether they let him have it to spend and play with, that's probably another matter. Actually, they intend to keep it. This is, you could develop a theory that the policy of the Western imperialist states, and there's no other word for them, is to steal, literally, to keep themselves in business. They say, you know, boy, we're short of cash. Well, we could take Venezuela the gold. We could take their oil companies. And, you know, if it, suppose, they, I mean, after all, it is an international operation, the Venezuela oil. So we can take that, and we take out of it what we need. And we have people like Freeland and Trudeau to give, put a funny face on it. I put a smiley face. It's all baloney. They're just taking things that don't belong to them. So anyway, Mexico is resisting in a very principle. And Mexico's policy, I notice, is like a good boxer. They're protecting their chin, but they're not giving up. They're willing to fight, but they will not. They're not foolish enough to just make this into play Trump's game of shouting and pointing and threatening. And until they're directly threatened, they intend to simply stand by principle. And their votes are very encouraging. I raised the issue of Spain because recently one dramatic thing that happened was the president of Mexico, Mr. Obrador, privately wrote a letter to the king of Spain. Spain reinstated their king. Just think about that. Anyhow, he wrote to him saying, you know, we, he didn't say you, he said we, President of Mexico and you, the King of Spain, ought to apologize and recognize that we overran Mexico and the indigenous people, and we stole their wealth and we obliterated many of them. We ought to apologize and say something about it. And the response from, well, two things happened. One, it was a private letter to sound them out. And so that was somebody leaked that to embarrass Obrador. So that's the kind of funny hijinks that go on in this. But that was a very good point. We'll come back to that. And that was Yves Engler. And he does do terrific work. Go to his site. And, you know, you just scroll down. He's been talking about these subjects a long time. You can see it coming. I don't know.
So, Phil, during the interview,
you
said a great question. Who is Human Rights Watch? I mean, we always see Ken Roth's name. I want you to know I did a little internet search to find out the board of directors, the people who actually own and control Human Rights Watch, cannot be found. You know,
really?
It really cannot be found anywhere on the internet. It's like who we are. Oh, we're people who do this and that. But then most organizations will tell you, here's the name of the board of directors.
Yeah.
Not Human Rights Watch. We don't know who they are. Yeah. We do know, though, that Soros gives them $100 million.
Yeah, but exactly. But that's out of the goodness of his heart because he's a wonderful guy.
Yeah.
And, you know, and so
we should call him up and ask him to give to CIUT. Yes, should go to CIUT.fm and contribute some money.
Is there an international crisis? He's got a group.
Yeah.
So, it's very striking. And I do think that people are wising up. That's just it. I think people are saying, you know, after all, that most of these groups appeared after the, I hate this expression, fall of the Soviet Union. And they said, and basically some of the former CIA people said, well, now we just go public. And that seemed to me that is what happened. And so keep your eyes on them because they're probably going to go back underground again so that you won't be seeing them up front. But I'm glad Mr. Roth is secure in his job, and he makes somebody estimates, what, $400,000 a year? And for that money, he tweets insults of anybody who opposes any leader in the world who opposes U.S. foreign policy.
Well, if you go to the website today and they say countries where they have critical stories, and the first eight stories are all countries, eight countries that the U.S.
doesn't like,
disagrees with. I'm sure that's a funny coincidence, thing. Though, Phil. It's got to be a coincidence. I mean, it's just Mr. Roth just wants to talk about human rights. Yes,
absolutely. Yeah, nothing else.
Yeah.
This is CIT. Remember now. Look, this is the most important fundraising membership drives that we've had in our history. So go to CIT.fm and make a generous donation to CIUT. Because it's a great station, and out of kindness for this program, mention the Taylor Report. We mentioned the Spanish election. Yes. There's the Ukrainian election.
Yes, and an interesting election.
The government here, it seems to have shaken the government in Ottawa, so much so that Chrystia Freeland has nothing to say.
She hasn't
congratulated her? There are
pictures
of her with her mouth open and staring off, but no... She's going, because Mr. Poroshenko, the chocolate king, got clobbered. And was reported here. I mean, obviously, everybody thought that Poroshenko was the one who's going to fight the Russians for us, and he was going to rally everyone. A very interesting fact is that the only place he got votes was in the Lvov area. If a map of Ukraine will show you that Lvov still loves the chocolate king. But the rest of the country couldn't stand him. And Mr. Axworthy, former liberal minister, he came back, and he basically said he didn't like the result. I mean, he said, there's something about this guy. Well, the guy's a comedian, which you mean he got something on Axworthy, because Axworthy definitely not funny. So Axworthy, though, at the Star, took the occasion of Mr. Axworthy's remarks to spread false news. And as you know, the Star is dedicated to fighting false news, so I'm trying to help them out here. Here's what they wrote. After street protests drove Russian-friendly President Viktor Yanukovych from power in 2014, Russia invaded and annexed Ukraine's southern Crimea Peninsula, aggressively backed separatists in Ukraine's eastern provinces. They did not invade. They were already there, dummy. The Russians had a major military base there, and there was no invasion. And anybody, let's be realistic, go and have a look yourself, although you may get punished by the foreign ministry for traveling. But they only did what was reasonable. That was the protests they spoke of became violent. The violent seizure of power in Kiev, at the so-called Maidan exercise, that destroyed Ukrainian democracy, and people do what they ordinarily do when they lose their ability to select their leaders. They vote with their feet. So the people of eastern Ukraine, who were many of whom are Russian speakers or people who are very friendly to Russia and have every reason to be so, they said, well, we're not going to play ball with you. You didn't play ball with us. It was supposed to be, and there was an agreement in 2014 to have a new election. Mr. Yanukovych agreed to step down, and there would be a new election. But the U.S. State Department was playing for blood. They wanted it all. So they supported the armed militants who created havoc. And then they didn't say, when the havoc died down, they didn't say, well, now that we want an election where all the parties will be able to function. No, the gang that took over had destroyed the country. And it remains destroyed. So that's the way the ball bounces. So I'm sorry, Mr. Axworthy, but you're in for a lot of frowns in your future. This is the Taylor Report. Go to CIET.fm. Get in early on a chance to go to Dubrovnik. Mick has been looking after us. We're very appreciative. And Phil Conlon, thank you. We'll see you next week.